Michael Reif, MD, FAAP, is a professor of pediatrics and the director of the Autism Spectrum and Neurodevelopment Clinic and director of the LEND program at the University of Minnesota. He is the author of the AAP book, ADHD, What Every Parent Needs to Know. What is ADHD?
ADHD is really a developmentally inappropriate or immature level of inattention and hyperactivity and impulsivity that is causing daily problems in a child's life.
Why do so many children have ADHD?
The prevalence rate that we talk about now is about 8% of children based on criteria set in the guidelines. In the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. One issue in that is that the guidelines change from time to time. The last change was about 14 years ago, and at that time the prevalence of ADHD increased because of the new guidelines. They're about to change again, and at that time we'll have a different prevalence. For instance, one of the things that is going to likely change in the new guidelines is right now we talk about children needing to have some signs before 7 years of age of ADHD. In the new guidelines, it's going to likely be under 12 years of age. So again, that will change the prevalence. The prevalence would be more certain if we had some biological test to do, like a blood test or a neuroimaging, but we don't at this time. So the prevalence is really set by who meets these DSM criteria.
What are some of the early warning signs that a child may have ADHD, and what age do children usually start showing these symptoms?
If children have the core symptoms of ADHD, which are inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity, that makes looking for ADHD more apparent. But we also recommend looking for ADHD in children who are struggling with relationships with parents, with peers, with work production, or struggling academically in school.
The AAP has recently released some new guidelines for diagnosing and treating ADHD. What has changed?
They're similar to the older guidelines, but the new guidelines include children and youth from 4 to 18 years of age, where before it was a much narrower group of kids. The reason that we've done this is because we know now more about ADHD in preschoolers and ADHD in adolescents. Another thing that's changed is there are sections in the guidelines now for children who don't quite meet the diagnosis of ADHD but are having similar problems. So it will helpfully guide clinicians through what do you do even if you don't have a full diagnosis of ADHD. The guidelines emphasize the DSM-4 criteria from the American Psychiatric Association. One thing that they do is ask that parents and teachers both have input, or that input is given through different major settings in a child's life. They also encourage primary care clinicians to identify coexisting conditions like depression or anxiety, learning disabilities, etc. And one helpful thing that's come along since the last set of guidelines is that there is now a new mental health toolkit through the Academy of Pediatrics that provides guidelines and indicators for how to both diagnose and do interventions on these problems. Another thing that these guidelines emphasize is that ADHD is a chronic condition, and we should think about ADHD as being just a chronic disability, and children with ADHD would qualify for children and youth with special health care needs. Some medications have been added to the armamentarium of pediatricians, like long-acting guanfacine and clonidine. So that is a little more spelled out in these guidelines. And aside from the guidelines, there's an ADHD toolkit that has been revised to match the new guidelines.
You mentioned the guidelines cover children who may not meet a full diagnosis of ADHD. Could you give me an example of what that might be and what the guidelines suggest for managing those children?
Children who do not quite meet the DSM criteria for ADHD would be children where you'd be hesitant to make a diagnosis. The guidelines of the DSM are that you need to have 6 out of 9 of the questions that have to do with inattention, or 6 out of 9 of the questions that have to do with hyperactivity and impulsivity. You have to have those criteria met before you would make the diagnosis. But then you could ask the question, well, what about a child who's still struggling, who just doesn't have those number of criteria? And those are the children that we would suggest have ADHD as problem behavior, but not as a full diagnosis by the criteria that we use. The guidelines for giving help to children and their parents who don't meet the criteria but struggle with some of the problems is generally educational measures and measures for parents for understanding and helping problematic behaviors. But the recommendation is not for medication management for children who do not strictly meet the criteria.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the younger children, the new preschool age group. What are some of the challenges of diagnosing ADHD in this young of a child, and what are the recommendations for treating the condition?
Someone who is 3 has many more of the behaviors in their, just as a typically developing child, that look similar to ADHD. They're generally more active, can be more impulsive, etc. The older children get, the more likely they are to make it easier to make the diagnosis. So we struggle with what to do if children are under preschool age. Another issue is that children may be only in one setting. We like to try to make the diagnosis of ADHD is across major settings of your life. But if you're a child and just at home, it's hard to know if your behavior generalizes to other settings. The recommendation that we usually make is that children get some outside observations and possibly outside help. We might recommend a structured preschool for a child or an early childhood special education intervention from the schools instead, and we are more hesitant to go on to medication management. A major recommendation, for example, would be to put a child in a program or have parents get some help with behavior therapy. The behavior therapy is not enough to really help regulate the behavior, and the behavior is enough of a significant interference with functioning, then we would recommend cautiously trying medication, and they would be the same medications as used for older children, but more carefully managed in terms of side effects and dose.
Can you talk about treatment for the grade school age child with ADHD?
The basic recommendations in these guidelines and in general are to think about ADHD as a chronic condition. So we generally recommend that physicians and other people treating ADHD think of treating this in the context of a medical home, which means helping parents with a care manager and facilitating really good communication with everyone in the treatment team, including schools and outside therapists. We recommend thoroughly educating parents and siblings and children about ADHD as an important foundation for the treatment. We recommend the 2 major interventions, which would be medication management with either stimulant medications or other medications that have been more recently approved for ADHD, as well as behavior therapy.
How safe are the stimulant medications that are used?
The major side effects of medications are generally mild if they occur at all, and they would be more like stomach aches, headaches, trouble falling asleep, and decreased appetite. So they are side effects that need to be worked around if they occur, but don't have any long-term problems associated with them. One of the major studies that has looked at ADHD has found some growth issues possible, particularly at children taking higher doses of the medication. So we definitely recommend following growth very carefully. If there is going to be a growth problem, it's likely to occur and then settle down within the first 1 to 3 years of treatment. And even the studies that show there is some growth effect, it's usually 1 to 2 centimeters of growth different, which is basically less than an inch. In adolescents, a special consideration is whether these medications might be diverted or sold in the community. We think about alternate medications to the usual stimulant medications, and these can include lisdexamfetamine, which is called Vyvanse, because it has to be absorbed in the GI tract in order to be effective. And we would also consider non-stimulants like atomoxetine or the newer medications that have been approved, include long-acting guanfacine and long-acting clonidine. The cardiac effects question has been looked at pretty carefully over the last few years. So we do make a recommendation for taking a really careful history around cardiac symptoms, because there are conditions like Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome. We ask about any sudden deaths in the family. There's another condition called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and another called long QT syndromes. If children have heart disease, we recommend getting a recommendation from a cardiologist before doing it. And if there's this family history, we carefully consider whether we want to use these medications or the non-stimulants like atomoxetine or the long-acting guanfacine or clonidine.
When children grow into adolescence, do parents and doctors need to manage their ADHD differently? You touched a little bit on the medications, but are there other recommendations for this particular population?
It's really critical, if you're following a child long-term, to have the child really understanding ADHD by the time they reach adolescence. That's going to really help ensure that they see it as their problem and they see that they're capable of taking the measures that they need to help them the most. So the best preparation for treating ADHD in adolescence is really to educate and empower children before they reach adolescence. The symptoms of ADHD that have only arisen very late in childhood or adolescence, one thing we consider is, could there be alternate causes? Some of the alternate causes could be substance abuse or depression or anxiety that could be looking like ADHD. So we take a special care to try to consider those before we consider just treating the ADHD. For children who have been diagnosed before adolescence and were continuing care, there is not necessarily a reason for changing the medication dose if they've been, say, on stimulants before, except if they seem like they're not as effective as they were when the adolescent was a child. Children who have ADHD often take risk-taking behaviors like jumping off of chairs or running into streets. By the time you become an adolescent, the problems may get more problematic in terms of substance abuse or particularly with driving. Driving is an area where adolescents who have ADHD have 6 to 8 times the number of motor vehicle accidents as adolescents who do not have ADHD. So we would like to recommend that adolescents don't drive with more than one other individual, and that hopefully for the first year they're driving with an adult also. And we recommend that if they are driving and stimulants are effective, that they always make sure that they're driving when the stimulants are still active.
Do children outgrow ADHD?
Generally, what the research has found is that children with ADHD have 2 to 3 year lags in their brain maturity. They mature also, but it may be later than children who do not have ADHD. the thing that is the most striking is that the hyperactivity generally diminishes or goes away around adolescence or high school age, but they can still have difficulty with attention or impulsive behaviors. So we just shift our focus a little bit on what elements need to be treated. One other consideration is that the demands of school are pretty rigorous for someone who has ADHD in terms of organizing, planning, getting your work done, getting your work turned in, and doing a lot of things that you don't particularly care to do. As after school, there's more opportunity to do a job that really meets your strengths instead of some of your weaker areas. So some adults who still have some of the symptoms of ADHD, if they've picked a lifestyle and vocation that really kind of matches their strengths, often don't need to take medication or take lower doses.
Do you have any other advice for parents?
My advice for parents would be to focus as much as possible on children's strengths. Having ADHD and the way that our school environments is set up is likely to be a big struggle. So what you'd like the most is for a child with ADHD to emerge as a young adult with good self-esteem. So focusing on strengths is something I particularly think is important. Another important issue is for parents not to feel isolated in terms of making and following through the treatment plan. So that's why we emphasize the medical home and hope that parents will not have to be the sole care managers. We hope that they'll get assistance from the kind of care manager that medical home teams provide. I think it's really important for parents to be educated about ADHD and to educate a child's siblings about ADHD so that the family can really be prepared to meet the challenges and that the other children don't feel neglected. It's also really important for parents to have good communications with teachers and caregivers. A lot of times we see in practice that parents become more and more alienated from schools, for instance, because of schools not providing accommodations that parents feel their children need. But we advise as much as possible for parents and school teachers, physicians, and others to really consider themselves part of the team along with the child to be in a problem-solving and proactive role rather than kind of contentious role, which is easy to get into. And finally, I feel that it's really important for parents who have children with ADHD who have oppositional or defiant kinds of behaviors, for parents to feel really comfortable with the principles of behavior modification and behavior management. And those principles can be learned from books, but more often it's helpful to have a therapist to go through what's called behavioral therapy or behavioral parent training.